of the registrar to verify.
No.
Do the bank give in an electronic readable statement information that can be harvested automatically, or has somebody to transfer that information over manually into an application process to you at the registrar level?
That depends very much of the banks. And in our case, we must ensure that these registrars bank fulfills these criteria. Because what is also in this FATF 40+9 is that if there is a bank transaction and the beneficiary bank must verify that remitter's bank fulfills these criteria. So in our case, important is to set criteria to registrar's bank, and for example, in European Union, it's very common that you can get information out of a bank. So bank transaction confirmations automatically.
No, I mean the capturing what the receiving bank gives you. They can give it to you on paper. They can give you a PDF or something, or an online thing. The registrars then basically have to capture this manually and put this in an application. Or how do they do that? Is that not a lot of work for them?
No. It depends of the banks. Of course, from some banks, you must take it out manually. But there are also banks nowadays who provide this information automatically. So if there is a bank transaction to your account, or registrar's account, then they send, for example, an email or use some kind of SSL channel to send you the information that send you this bank transaction confirmation automatically. So it depends very much the bank. It depends the registrars which bank they choose to operate with. And this solves the problem. And if you look to the future, of course, the internet banking is developing at very, very high speeds, very, very, very well, I can say. And this solves the problem. So did you get the answer?
Yeah. In my country, the banks are a bit useless. But some of them, actually, you can download your statement in an Excel spreadsheet, for example.
Yes.
And that you then can massage into whatever information you need and automatically.
Yeah, and this information is okay for us. Yeah. So it very much depends the bank.
Russ Mundy, Sparta. Spent a bit of time working on DNSSEC and encountered a number of entities and organizations that were resistant to doing it for various reasons. And I heard you mention in the presentation that the registrars were reluctant to accept this process. Do you have any plans, thoughts on how to overcome this resistance, whether it's financial motivation or free stuff for them or something else to get them to accept it?
Thank you. That was a very good question. How to come over the resistance? Of course, this monetary motivation is useful. But as we are a country code domain, so we should treat all the parties equally. And what we used for motivation, if we used this kind of explanation or argumentation for registrars, that if registrant isn't identified, then registrar is responsible for the domain name. But if registrant is identified, so he is in the internet with the domain name holder is in the internet with his own face, So the domain name holder is really responsible for the actions taken with the domain name. And so the responsibility is transferred from registrars to registrant. And this was in Estonia argument to our community and particularly registrars. Thank you.
All right, we've got time for one more question, if there is one. All right, no more questions. So then we can continue on. Oscar Moreno from .pr is going to speak about some not direct related DNS or something work, but security work they've been doing at the laboratory. Some of it may have application for us, and I must warn you, it's a little bit deep.
So, no, I don't think it's so deep. I'm sorry if at any time I mention something and you have any questions, feel completely free to tell me, because my intention is to tell you about what we are doing. And it's essentially security. So we are in the area of security, and we have found some things that are helpful for security in both wireless and watermarking. So we had to find out. I intend to bring this as a means of collaboration. I believe it's the future. So anybody who wants to collaborate in this... sorry, so this
is not working. Okay. Get ready to turn your mic off.
What's that? Is that okay now? Sorry, as you can see, I'm technologically quite down. So anyway, so Everhard, how do I change to the next... in the one before, this collaboration with Dr. Tirkel from Australia and myself. Dr. Tirkel was one of the fathers of the watermark area. So he's a person who accredited in the internet as coining the term digital watermark. So you know what a watermark is, because a watermark is what you use, for example, in the dollar. I mean, if you have $100, you go to a supermarket, they give it to the lady. She will take it up and look it in the light. And what is she doing is she's looking for the watermark. And the watermark is a means of authenticating, in this case, that the dollar is authentic. And actually, a watermark, in this case, cannot be reproduced in the optical manner that they use for counterfeiting money in the past. So that's quite effective as a way of avoiding kind of counterfeiting money. So we have visible watermarks, and that's in the left there, as well as not visible in the right. So you can see that there is a circle, and that's the watermark. You know that in the paintings of Chagall, there is a fleur-de-lis, which is a watermark. So it authenticates that painting is a Chagall, because it's the paper itself uses that special paper with a watermark. So anyway, so that's what a watermark is. If it has a watermark, then it's authentic. And so we have, in our case, we have a technique for watermarks, and I will tell you about what it is. And so next, please. So, as you can see, we have many kind of applications in the area of watermark. I mentioned already the authentication. So you want identification of content. Forensics, for example, is very important. In the case you have, we have applications where you have something and it's taken to court. A case, for example, of some emergency audio. The lawyers have a lot of cases when there is a recording, for example, or something, and it has it been tampered. For example, you have a video, and has somebody, say, of a thief or some crime was committed, and was that, you take it to court, did somebody tamper it or not? So the question of tampering becomes a very important area where you would like to have a watermark, so to prove that nobody tampered the either it could be an audio, it could be a video, it could be many things. Another example you have is the movies. Nowadays, you know, the movies are immediately, you put the movie out and somebody copies it and sells it all over the internet. So how do you, can you protect that? So I was talking in the plane recently, and the guy told me, oh, yeah, we have, actually, I sell software for protecting the videos. It's a, how do you call it? You encode the movie in such a way, it's encoded, so presumably you cannot copy it. But the people take out the code, the encoding, and then still then take it out. He wants to know that this copy that they made does not belong to the ones that this company is administering, that it was somebody else's. So he would like to have a watermark so that when they actually play it out in the web, then it will be known that it was not his. So then, as you can see, that image is very simple. In the watermark, there are two simple processes. One is that you want to embed the watermark into the into whatever it is that you want to watermark. So that's the first step. And the second step that you need in the technology, so it's really two steps. One is you want to be able to put it wherever and be able to do it. That's embedding. The embedding is technically complicated, and we have actually patented about that, about how to do the embedding in such a way that the embedding will be sturdy. There are ways that a hacker would like to take away the watermark, and that's actually, in the case where you want to make the watermark very strong, that is what is called a robust watermark. And in some cases, you don't care, and that is a watermark is fragile. Like, for example, in the case I told you before of the person that that authentication, if the watermark is in there, it's already proof that it's been tampered. So in that case, you want to put a watermark which is fragile, and that will prove the watermark was on there, but somebody's tampered it. So two kinds of watermark. So in that case, we have a watermark that doesn't have too much power, and it just makes it just make it visible. So next. So actually, the one before, so I come back, is that the correlation is a very important thing. That's, our technology is based upon the idea of correlation. The idea of correlation is that if what you are, you have the watermark, and we have many different watermarks, and you want to know, okay, does this have my watermark? Then you do something and test it, and you find it when there is a peak in the so-called correlation. You can see the peak in there. So the correlation is an important component, and it's explained in there. So now the watermark, we use it in such a way where we actually put information into the you can put all kind of information, and by putting more watermarks, then you have more information. You can put multiple watermarks. Like as I said, you can put a robust watermark as well as a fragile watermark with the intention of meeting different purposes. Okay? So and we are partnering in this case with, there is a company called Iomniscient, which is a video company, where they actually have a airport in Mexico City protected by their video surveillance kind of systems, and they're interested in every image. You want to have a unique watermark. So you would like to have a watermark so that, in other words, you would like to have many watermarks. So you would like to have a capacity that there will be a lot of watermarks. Some of the systems, they have one watermark, and that's not good enough. So you would like to have a unique watermark in every image. And these watermarks, you would like to be able to differentiate one from the other. That's some of the things that the invention we have actually does it. Now, I'm entering into the other area, and the idea is that we are using both these images, these sequences, that they are called spread spectrum sequences. So let me explain a little bit about spread spectrum, what is the area. Spread spectrum is another synonym for DMA, and spread spectrum was a technique, a science, that was developed during the Second World War, 1940s, by the U.S. military. And what is the idea? And it's a very profound and very important. It's been used throughout by the military in the U.S. for many, many years, and it was secret until the 90s, the 80s. It was a secret technology. And the idea is simple and it's still very profound. So what you do is that you have this information you want to send, or this sequence of numbers, and what you do is actually you disguise it in such a way that any casual observer or eavesdropper will appear that is noise. So you have information being transmitted which is disguised as noise. So that's really the area of spread spectrum. Why is that? Well, during the war, you wanted to communicate with your friend, but the enemy, the instant they heard the communication, will jam it. So that way, it's impossible to jam it because you don't know that something, some communication is going on. So the area of spread spectrum is that, is the idea of spreading the spectrum. So you have a signal, but that signal you spread throughout the spectrum to make it appear as noise. Now, the CDMA, which is, as I said, synonym with a spread spectrum, it means code division multiple access. Code division, it really means spread spectrum, which I just explained. But multiple access is that now the second thing you do is you would like to have many users using that same space. And that is the second. Why do you want that? Well, you want to do that to make it more efficient. You wouldn't like to have only one user because that's inefficient. CDMA is the opposite of that. You know, in the past, I don't know if you know, where you would like to communicate in wireless and you have to ask the permission from the FCC, and it was hell because I did it myself. It took 1 year, one full year, asking for the permission, and it has to be point to point. And you use one frequency for the transmission, another for the receiving. And it was really hell. Now, CDMA, this is a technique that started in the U.S. government say, okay, we are freeing all these frequencies for public use. Anybody can use it. Now, you are using the CDMA to have many users sharing those frequencies throughout. And so that is the technique that Qualcomm made billions of dollars with that technique, with the CDMA. So Qualcomm is a company that is championed that technology. So we have a transmitter and we have a receiver. So you transmit using CDMA and you receive using CDMA. Yes, next. Now, in the many uses, for example, GPS uses CDMA. So now, what is it that we have done, by the way, for both CDMA and watermark? We found some ways to make it much more stronger, the signal, so that it will be less possible to hack it. So the problem with the CDMA is that it's secret. I mean, nobody can, but if the hacker is smart enough, he will listen to the communication for a long time, finally will detect that there is some real communication that is really is not real random. So let me explain that a little bit, because that's why Eberhard said it's really very complicated, but it's really not complicated. What you are doing is a mathematical area called pseudo-random sequences. Pseudo-random means it's not really random. If it's random, there is no way to control it. It's noise. If it's pseudo-random, means that apparently appears to everybody that is random, but really it's not. The one who's sending knows that it's not random, knows what are the laws, and does it in such a way that will be completely determined, and he will know how to do it, and there is a system behind. So that is the area. You know the system, you design it in such a way that it will serve your purposes, and it will be meaningful communication going on. So that's really what the area of CDMA is. We have to design these sequences for these users, and it's a very exciting new area, and it's great. But anyway, GPS uses CDMA too. So what we have is a method that will make stronger these signals, more secure. And this is part of what we found, is a method to find more secure C sequences by using this method. I'll tell you a little bit more about that. Now, this is a short code in the Angular construction, produces better sequences than the one that they use presently in the GPS. Google Aperture Image is another application for our technology, and this is an application that has to do with the X-rays and such communications, and we have a patent also for that. And we use we found a new Legendre array, which is very exciting, and we can use it for that application. Yes, everybody. Now, let me tell you about the old technology. Digimark is a company that has the watermarks from the past. What do they use? They use, again, pseudo-random sequences. But in their sequences, is the technology is such that they don't have what is called cross correlation. So they can put, they use a completely random. Our sequences are not really random at all, but we disguise them as random. And so we can have many sequences, and each of them we can know, okay, this one is different from this one. So if we put in day one this sequence and this second sequence in day two, then we can know which one. So day one I gave it to him, and day two I give it to him, then we know, okay, this is the one I gave to him, this is the one I gave to him. And if this one means something, and this one means something else, then we will able to know, okay, this is what happened. This means this, therefore, this is what I should do. Okay, so the usual, the usual method doesn't have good cross correlation. You cannot distinguish between two watermarks. So that's bad. I mean, you would like to be able to make a watermark so that you will distinguish between one and another. You would like to give a watermark to him, another one to him, and be able to know that this is the one that belongs to this one and this one to this one. Now, yeah. Now, we have what is called fingerprinting, and this is what I've been trying to do. What is fingerprinting? You use fingerprinting when you like to determine the identity of somebody. So fingerprinting and watermarks are completely different things, because in the case of fingerprinting, it determines exactly the identity of an individual. And this is really what we have, is fingerprinting. So fingerprinting and watermarks are essentially different techniques, but in our case, we have watermarks that are also fingerprinting. Okay. Now, in the construction, and this is what maybe is kind of complicated for Everhart, so we compose in a certain manner these sequences that will produce from one sequence another sequence which is more stronger cryptographically. So essentially what we have is a method to produce a stronger cryptographic, and technically what we are producing is sequences that have much higher linear complexity. So this is a measure of how strongly cryptographic a sequence is, and so we have a method. That's the heart of what we have found, is this method to produce higher cryptographic sequences, and they are gone from the area of finite fields. As I said, we use auto and cross correlation, and as you can see, the peak means that you found the sequence you are looking for, and this one means that no, you didn't find it. The cross correlation is the principle behind, and you can see the sequences are producing a two-dimensional arrays of ones and minus ones. And ones and minus ones is up or down. It's kind of noise. The idea, by the way, behind is that you want to have this principle in mathematics, because this is called the law of large numbers. Then if you flip a coin long enough, it should be equally up or down, head or tails. Both are equally probable. Yeah. So this is the Legendre array, which I said before. So let me see which one. Let me go to the application. No, sorry. Go ahead. Yeah. Yeah, so these are some of the arrays, how they are produced, and it's a very highly technical, as I ever have said. So go ahead. Yeah, these are actually we have the only watermarks which are usable for videos. So they are in multi-dimensional. So this is the first watermark that you can do it for many dimensions. So this is actually some of what we are doing. And so consequently, they are the first watermark that you can put in a video and be it throughout. There are all watermarks at the video that you put at the beginning or at the end. No, ours are throughout the movie. Go ahead. Go ahead. Oh, as you can see, you can use them for multimedia. Actually, we can coordinate so that the audio and the video are coordinated. There is a famous case in the U.S. that there was a robbery, and the guy fell down not at the same time that the shot sounded. So there was always a question, was that tampered by somebody or something? Because it's strange, it should be at the same time. No, he falls down and the shot is heard. So if you coordinate so that the audio and the video, the watermark will be at the same time together, then that will be prevented. Then you will know this is being tampered or not. So this is why you need. Now, this is a project of a hospital in emergency recording. We have developed this for a hospital in Australia with my colleague from Australia. And there is an emergency call the hospital is receiving, and we put the watermark on the device. And that's a very simple application that, as you can see, it's all there. And it will protect, because they have this case of 14 years, where the question is, was it tampered or not? And the hospitals are really worried about such things. So, next. So the video surveillance, I was telling you, the company iOmniscient, and they are interested in one watermark for every image. And you can see in there the video surveillance from iOmniscient. As I said, they have the airport for Mexico City and for Kuala Lumpur. Next one. That's, again, the thing. This is the last one. The e-commerce community. This is a project we have in Puerto Rico for .pr, so this is applicable to the CCTLDs, where you have, for example, a community of e-commerce, and you are selling, say, paintings, and you want to have a certificate saying that the paintings are authentic. So that's a very important thing when you do e-commerce. If this is authentic, somebody should better certify. And you can put a watermark in the certificate to provide authenticity of the certificates. And that's it, you know? So sorry if I took too long.
Actually, you managed to 30 seconds over time, which is quite excellent. I must say, being a doctor myself, I have an interest in this X-ray that were mentioned. So we'll talk about it later. Is there any questions? I will allow one question. Okay, I'll go by. No. I go by the age.
I don't know which way in age you mean, but okay. Okay. This looks like wonderful work. I like this. So it sounds like you've come up with a set of functions that have better autocorrelation and cross-correlation properties. Is the result of this work published, i.e., is it public? Can I look for the algorithms? Can I?
Yeah, we have three patents. Thank you, Albert. We have three patents, as well as we have publications. And it's always, for me, I'm new in this matter of patents, is always a mess. What can I publish or not? But after I clear up with the guys who know, I will be happy to give you whatever we have. But the patents are there. You can immediately look at them, and I can tell you. I can send it to you if you give me your email. But anyway, please, I feel honored to be working with you guys, and anybody that is interested in collaborating and working together and do something about these, I'd love to do it. It could be for money, or it could be in other ways, because we have both things which are for free that we'd like to share, others where we can develop a joint project. By the way, the wireless, the Caribbean, are very interested in developing some kind of a NFP wireless in the Caribbean using the new CDMA technique that we have. We have our wireless are wonderful, and they're superior to what the previous CDMAs are.
Okay, thank you very much. I noticed there were two more questions, Nigel and Warren, but I think you can easily take it offline so that we can carry on. Mario Guerra is from the local NIC, and he's going to talk to us about modifications they made to FRED, or what are they using about FRED about as EPP.
It's really about how have we used FRED. I told Mark about we are using it as a middleware tool. Okay. FRED is an EPP implementation where EPP is a tool for DNS registrations. I assume it's quite popular now. It was developed by our Czech counterparts. Jaromir is the developer in chief of that tool. Basically, it is based on EPP, but it has some useful extensions, especially that one called NSSets. Normal EPP use hosts, individual hosts, as one of its elements. FRED was developed with an extension called NSSets. Which is an aggregation of hosts, pretty useful for people registering several domains with the same DNS servers. It has been developed in C++ and Python, using Postgres. Postgres as the SQL server implementation. It has several components like modules for Apache, which is a web server tool. Uses SSL, Corban, and implements Whois protocol. Something that was quite useful for us is that it uses two command line interfaces for administering the DNS, one for administration, one for basically registration of contacts, DNS servers, and domains. It was useful for us because about a decade ago, we developed a totally homemade for our PR domains. It is under www.nickcr webpage. It was totally Java-based, using MySQL as a service, so when we wanted to implement EPP, we have two alternatives: develop again the DNS implementation from scratch, or using already made EPP implementation. We liked the way the Freddy's has been developed. We consider it very solid. For example, it has a very good consistency in database. It also don't allow to register a domain with only one name server. Very details that made the EPP implementation very solid, and which ends with the bind-like DNS tables, which are text-based. Okay, Fred has several parts for registrar zones, for billing. Especially important for us is Fred Client, which is an excellent command line interface, which manages quite easily context NS sets, which that is aggregation of hosts and domains. Each registrar manages its data independently. By the way, we are registrar and registrants at this point, but we are planning to extend this tool to people like GoDaddy or all registrants around the world. We hope to use Fred Client as an interface, so it is easier for the people registering domains to use this tool than to have the homemade tool using EPP. It has command line help. It's quite easy to transfer data to another registrar in the future. So if you don't like such GoDaddy, you will go to any other registrar, for example. At this point, as said, there's only one registrar now, which is ourselves, NixCR. We plan to use another registrars in the future. There's a good possibility that we make other people to use Fred Client as an interface and not EPP. Okay. Now, about our application, we developed about 2001 or something like that, a Java-based application, totally made of free software. At this point, we use OpenJDK as a Java implementation, Tomcat, Apache, and Velocity, which are the Java-based tools using now. Using a MySQL 5 database, totally homemade at first. We at this point use two-level and three-level domains. That is, for example, UCR, ACCR for the University of Costa Rica, or UCRCR for the same institution. The UCR, the University of Costa Rica, used both. Tables, meaning DNS tables, were previously generated by hand. And that is quite prone to error, especially if we have at this point 14,000 domains. So you can omit a period or many kind of errors. Fred has a tool, Jenson client, which you can generate automatically DNS tables. So it is now procedure. We use Fred as a middleware, not as we don't use a web page around Fred, but rather we use our homemade application and modify it so we use Fred client for generating tables. That way we didn't have to redevelop the application. Well, later I'm telling you that we are rethinking our application, but I have that in a moment. We have plans for substituting the Kate-old Java-based application with possibly a Drupal-based one, which is a pretty interesting implementation with a CMS. CMS are very at this point are very flexible tools. And we have considered that it is a good alternative for developing applications, because several CMSs are pretty flexible. They are very modular, and it seems that we are going to use Drupal for the new application. At this point, we are in a early stage of the new application, but the change is quite spectacular from a Java-based, at this point, pretty stiff application, and a new one that will use also Fred as a middleware. And I think that's it. Oh, okay. Some conclusions. Fred is a solid EPP implementation. In Czech Republic, it has much more than a million domains registered using this tool, if I remember well. Yet, it is very friendly for end users, at least from our point of view. What I've told you, excellent for registrars, and it can be used as a complete tool, so to speak, or as a middleware, as we have done. Okay, that's it. Any questions?
Got 4 minutes for questions. Warren, you had a question for Oscar. If there's nothing else, why don't we go ahead with your questions from earlier?
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Sorry, there is a question from the remote, so let's take that one first and then Warren.
I have a question. Is it possible to sign a .cr domain right now?
We just signed a .cr about 1 week, 10 days ago. As a matter of fact, we have one client at this point which is signed also, Banco Nacional de Costa Rica Bank, a national bank in our country. And so that CR is signed. It's the NSAC signed. Any more questions?
So much of the digital watermarking stuff seems really interesting and really useful, but it seems like most of it is designed for sort of use in a court to be able to prove that this is correct. or at least, you know, that seems like one big use for it. Can you actually make lawyers and juries and people understand this, or do they just hear, you know, there is some magic here, don't worry, it's all good?
Well, I guess, like all technology, you have to have some kind of trust. But so I think that to understand what is behind, I think you have to allow to the technicians or the technical people look at it and say, okay, yeah, this is okay, it works. And so the idea is that it works, and then, you know, it's been tested. We have publications where people have looked at it in the patents also. They have looked at it in NSF proposals where they have looked at it, and everybody says, yeah, technology works, it's new, it's very good. And so essentially it's okay.
Okay, cool.
But the explaining to the lawyers exactly what it is or how you can use it, I think that's the main thing, finding, and that's what we are doing, finding different applications where you can use it. But the main the keywords are fingerprinting, that you can look at it. We have a new way of fingerprinting that's actually watermarked also at the same time. So that's essentially it. Thank you.
So this Nigel, you had no question? Has this been solved? While we are setting up the other laptop.
Again, this is actually quite simple. Would it be something that's easy and convenient to apply this kind of watermarking to, let's say, web pages, so that they are guaranteed to be the same in transit as they are delivered, or maybe even DNS packets? Would there be some advantage over DNSSEC?
I would say that the most you can use in the security, the better. And I would say use cryptographic, I mean, encode it, and at the same time put a watermark, do everything that you can. Because, for example, if you have a logo or you have a trademark or something, I think to put a watermark in your trademark, I think it's a safe thing to do. It actually is already being used. The watermarks have been used by Digimarc for many, many years. What we have is a different technology that has also fingerprinting. So we have improved on the old technology, but the watermarks have been used for a long time. Yeah. Thank you.
I have a microphone if somebody needs it. Dr. Lissa.
Thank you. We're just dealing with a small technical hiccup. Fortunately, Macintosh works.
My name is Antonio Gudinho. I represent the .mz registry that's from Mozambique. We are in the process of switching our registry from a manual process to COCA, which is a software kind of like FRED that was presented before. This basically is some information about .mz registry, some history, when it was created. It is currently run by CIUM, which is the IT center of the university. So the CCTLD is still run by the university where it was originally created. The university is a state university. So it was also the first internet service provider in the country at the time. That's why it held this role of CCTLD. I heard the Estonian earlier saying that their registry was small with 66,000 domains. Our registry only has about 3,000 domains. So this is small. It's not that big. That's why we were still running it manually up to now. We only register second level domains, so we don't register directly under .mz, but we register under .co, .mz, .org.mz, others, .gov.mz, .net, and so on. So I've already mentioned this, all the registrations are done manually. There is no online system. There is going to be very soon, but there isn't so far. We also have some secondary servers using the PCH Anycast cloud, which is provided free of charge. So the aim of this presentation is basically to share with the forum about the migration of our registry to an automated one, from a manual process to an automated one. So the choice of a registry system, this is the main issue here. It was not easy to select, mainly because the university does not really have enough funds to either build its own or acquire a commercially existing application. We were also offered in the past, I think, possibility of running the registry by somebody else, I mean outside the country, which we didn't really like the idea, so we also stayed and decided to just run it in-house. In 2004, we approached .br mainly because they are also Portuguese-speaking, so Mozambique is a Portuguese-speaking country. So we approached .br to see what was the possibility of porting their existing system to register .mz domains. We actually went to .br to see this system and see if we could somehow use it for our own. But it turned out that the .br system was really made, developed in-house mainly for their use. So it had a lot of stuff which was built into the code, and anything that needed to be changed, the code had to be changed. So this was a bit complex for us. We really wanted something that we could easily change from our system. We did try to make it operational, but after quite a while, we failed for different reasons. We had all kinds of issues to run the application. By chance, in one of the ICANN meetings, I came across the Kokka software through someone that was working for Kokka at the time. And there was also a presentation on Kokka, and from this presentation, I noticed that a lot of the stuff that we needed was within the software, and this was a while back, so a lot of updates have been done since then. We looked at the software, and we felt that this software covered everything that we needed to do, to register domains automatically or to automate the system and not have a manual one. It also offered the option of having registrars, which was something that we wanted to do, because at the moment it's just one central registry. We don't really have registrars. There are some registrars that do register their domains with us, but it's all done manually. So if somebody tries to register a domain with one of the registrars outside, what they basically do is they have to do a manual registration with us, because we don't have any system which is integrated. In 2008, we started testing the application. But since we didn't use CentOS or Ubuntu or any of other flavors of Linux that basically supports Kokka, we were using FreeBSD on all our servers. So we tried to make it run on FreeBSD for quite a while. After successfully running it on FreeBSD, we decided that we were going to switch to Kafka. But since we didn't have any database, like an online database that we could transform and import into Kafka, so we decided we should first make this database from all the manual registrations, and this work was then assigned to a group of people that would actually create this database that we could later import into Kafka. So this seemed to be quite a simple process, but for some reason this database was never ending. So people were just always saying that they were adding the content, but this work was never finished. So eventually the whole process stalled at the time because of this wait. So since we didn't want to wait, and we also noticed that since we stayed quite a while without moving the system to Kafka, and the number of updates that had been released, we noticed then that it would probably be better to run the system on CentOS or one of the other Linux where it was developed to run, because then it was easier to do the updating. We didn't want to have issues whereby we could not get support easily because we were running it on a different platform. So we decided, well, since we have still not implemented it, we might as well run it on CentOS. After we decided that we should do that, we decided now at the end of last year that we are going to test it on CentOS, because apparently that's the operating system where they developed Kafka. Kafka has, by the way, changed the name to Pomoja, but we are still referring to it as Kafka. It was supposed to be released this year, in the beginning of the year, but well, now we are stuck with the tender process for the hardware. So in Mozambique, things take quite a while to go through, especially if it's a government run. So we are now waiting for the tender process to be completed for the acquisition of the new hardware to run the system. And this is basically the point where we are now. I was going to show just a quick... not presentation. I was just going to show a quick practical session whereby we were going to just show you how the file looks like to be imported in Kafka and how easy it is to import the data into Kafka. Unfortunately, the laptop is not showing on the big screen.
You can use the browser and connect to it.
No, but then I need to put the file there.
We can also speak about it a little bit in theory. I know a little bit about it, and I don't want to take over his presentation, but I had a little input into the script that was written. So have a
yes, Dr. Lis was very helpful in providing with a script to convert the bind zone files to have the format required to import into the Kafka system.
Kafka has a feature import file as comma separated value file. Just click it on, tick it on, and then it asks for the file and then it sucks it in. Mm-hmm. So basically you have to develop a little comma separated value file, and I'm into Perl, so I dug into that and found a module that can read the zone file and then retrieve the name server, the domain names with its name servers as objects. And then even if you can't program as badly as I am, or can write as poorly as I am, it's basically a few hours thinking about it and writing this up and a few experiments, and it works, I think. It sucks the file, it generates it. The point is, it wants to have the name of a registrar, it wants to have the name of an admin contact, it wants to have a name of a technical and billing contact. So you have to generate one in the Coca tools as a pseudo registrar. You must have one registrar, you must have one context, and then you use the same names as the variables, and then you suck them all in under the same name. And then there's two ways of dealing is either you hire 5 students to do it for you, or if you have registrars, you tell the registrar, pull your domain names over through the transfer and so and clean it up yourself. At the same time, my advice is when you tell them, they must clean up the whois.
All right. Yes, I was interested in the first presentation with the UIs because we also have the same problem. There isn't really any validation done for data that is input when into the forms when people register domains. There's just no validation at all. It doesn't really matter who registers the domains. The domains can be registered by anybody. So far, we don't have any restrictions. It can be foreign. It can be any individual. They don't even present an ID to register a domain, so it's the UIS information is probably not a good place to look for validity.
I must say we have the same problem. We had one registrar where the management is sniffing shoe polish too much, probably because the gasoline is too expensive, and in the end they were just not listening. We write them and write them and write them, and they just don't listen. They have basically put themselves in as the registrant and as the admin contact. So we enforced our contract and give them 90-day notice and kick them off. That's the only way. In the end, you must have registrars. You must write a nice registrar agreement. That's my advice. Write a nice registrar agreement, and so that if they don't follow policy, you just terminate the agreement. And I think having registrars is better because you get rid of all these individuals that don't understand what a domain is. They don't understand any of this. They want you, that means you need to have a help desk, and if you can push this on the registrars, you get have less expenditure as a university for these things.
Yes, kids, yes. One of the main reasons to change was also the fact that you can have registrars on the system. So this was very important for us. That's what where we wanted to go.
What my advice is what Marek was saying. Make a good contract with the registrars and force the owners on the registrars. Another question that was, what was the real reason, what was the actual technical problems, day-to-day problems you were encountering that made you say, no, we can't do this on paper anymore? Did you say something about that? Can you say a little bit more about this?
Yes. I mean, one of the problems is basically the UIS. There is no UIS information. So we got a lot of requests from other registrars outside that they need to be able to access UIS information to see, you know, the status of their domains or if the domain is registered, if they can register. So since there's no automated system, we can't provide that information online. So they have to request it by email, which becomes a bit cumbersome.
Any questions on the floor? Oh, then you got off easy. Thank you very much.
Let's first see whether we can get the laptop to play.
Can I make fun about .fo? Yeah. Okay.
There you go. You should be able to see it there. When you go on presentation mode, you should be able to see it. Okay, our next presenter is Isaac Jacobsen. He has become part of an in-joke these days because if I want somebody to go away, I tell him to go and talk to Isaac Jacobsen, who will then stand up and say, I am Isaac Jacobsen and I run .fo. They also run Fred, and I heard about that they had a web front end of sorts. And though I personally don't run Fred, I know several country codes are,
And I think it's always good to hear what people are using it as middleware, or massaging it, or twisting it, or adding value to it. And therefore, I already pushed it in Dakar that he must come again, and if he was coming, whether he was would be willing to present, and here he is now.
Thank you. As Eberhard said, my name is Isaac Jacobson, and I am the chairman of the board of the Faroese CCTLD Council. And first I'll take a bit of the history of .fo and some fact about the Faroe Islands. The first question I always get is, where is it? No one knows where Faroe Islands is, but here it is. We are in the middle of the North Atlantic Ocean, approximately the same distance between Iceland, Scotland, and Norway. And some facts. There are 80 islands. That's the position of the globe. That's the size of it. And the size population is only 48,000. Only 48,000 people. So it's not a big country. The capital is only 19,000 people. We used to say that the biggest city in the Faroe Islands is Copenhagen, because there live more Faroese people in Copenhagen than in the capital. The language is Faroese, and we say it's the language of the Vikings. And it's a self-governed country within the Kingdom of Denmark, and we are not a member of EU. And the flag is called Mestje, and looks like that. And we like to brag a bit. This was what the National Geographic said about the Faroe Islands. The structure of .fo is that the University of Tórshavn, together with the IT Association of the Faroe Islands and the Ministry of Industry, appointed the independent FO Council. The history of the council, or of .fo, it started up in the University of Tórshavn in 1993, and the first FO domain name was created in 1995, and the Faroese IT Association and the Ministry of Industry elected the first FO Council in 2001. In the beginning, it was a Navision-based administration system, and it was implemented in 2001 also. And the FO Council produced the first set of rules in 2002. New regulations were implemented in 2006, and FRED was implemented in 2010. And the present council was elected in 2011. The FO Council is appointed by the Faroese IT Association, manned by two representatives from the private sector and two from the public sector. It's a self-owned institution governed by regulation created by the council, approved by the Minister of Industry. There are no employees at the FO Council. It's a hobby. So all of us in the council have full-time jobs elsewhere. We have one lawyer, one marketing specialist, and two IT specialists. The chairman, I, was the former president of the Faroese IT Association, and the vice chairman is the head of the IT of the University of Tórshavn, and the first member is a lawyer at the municipal office of the city of Tórshavn, and the second member is a marketing specialist. And the FO Council is a non-profit organization, not regulated by national law, renting out domains for 1 year at a time with the obligation to prolong the contract for 1 year at a time. Today, there are 3,109 domain names total. In the beginning, FL domain names were first and foremost for the Faroese companies and people. You had to prove your right to a name and not abuse third person's right. .FL administration should check both contents and usage. And the administration system was insufficient and required much manual work. Now we have loosened up a bit of the regulation. You can now apply for 1.FO, A.FO, FI.FO, 123.FO, etc. And we can block names of national or public interest like city names, island names, and so on. And we do not check content or usage. Only a court order will make us consider whether or not we'll take down a domain name. FRED is in action and is performing good and is not a labor-intensive system. In the near future, we will have a broader NS base in collaboration with PCH. And the NSSEC also in collaboration with PCH. And by the way, the zone will be published today, a signed zone in collaboration with PCH. And also IPv6. And we have to update FRED because we are still running the first version. And we need to review the FRED FO coding. And maybe to liberalize the regulation a bit more. And we have thought about to open up for registrars, but we are not unanimous about that. The FO administration is outsourced to a local security firm. When you apply for a .FO domain name, there are two ways. You can apply with an A application or B application. But first you have to be to identify yourself with a copy of your passport or social security number. Then you have to prove your right to the name with sufficient documentation, national or international, from a national or international registrar. Then you can apply with the A application, and you can now rent the name for 1 year at a time. If you can't prove your right to the name, you have to apply with the B application, and then the name will be published on NICFO and the national newspaper for a month. If no one objects with valid documentation and applies for the name, your application will be approved. The application fee for A application is 400 Danish kroners and B is 900 Danish kroners. And the annual fee is 450 Danish kroner or 60 euros or $80. US dollars. This is the face of .fo for the main user. There is a Faroese version and there is an English version. And this is what it looks like. And we have also a video tutorial down here for those who want want guidance on the way. We are running FRED Server 1.10, and I know now 2.3.20 is available. and it's run, it runs on a Fedora core 9.5. Here's some statistics and some other statistics of .fo. The amount of domain names is so small that it really doesn't matter. What is ThreadFO? It's a web front end for the Thread system, built with PHP and MySQL or LAMP, using Thread clients functions for update, PHP callings with Python, calling the Python functions, and uses SQL scripts for select PHP and Postgres queries. Using external payment solution for application program from Wannafind in Denmark. And we are not using the Thread mail functions or notifications. It runs on common hardware, no special requirements. And the backend administration system for the web, but is also done and secure. And some of the features of .fo or ThreadFO: register and modify user database and login system. Different privileges for holder, technical contacts, and billing contacts. User blocking and administration. Forgot password function. Register domain names, renew domain names, and delete domain names. Administering existing domain names. And is a domain name available? Register modified and delete organizations, email functions, notification, reminders, etc. An invitation for contact changes, email history, and summaries of your engagement in .fo, and more features. Who is a web interface, multi-languages, logs, statistics, general settings, blacklist and quarantine administration, price and products, external payment system, glue records administration, payment reports, possibility for free renewal of domain names, import system. Well, that was fast. Yeah. To register a user, you must be a person. Not a legal person, but a person. And in all our pictures, we have this timeline where you are in the process of registering. And register an organization after you are created as a user, you can create the organization, and you can register the domain name, and it's prepaid. And this is the summary I was talking about further up in the presentation, where you can see all your domain names, and you can make them. You can see all the holder and technical and building contacts under each of these if you push that green button there. And this tells that it is ready for renewal. Fred Ifo, this is the way it works. We use PHP function create user, and we call Python functions, and we use PSP, the PHP functions, and MySQL database, and this is the thread part of the system, and this is the thread FO part of the system. And here you can see the function we are using. And that's just a script of the PHP call for. Yep.
7 minutes.
That was fast.
So, any questions? The first question that I had, and he already answered it to me, so I'm putting it again, is this open source?
It is, but we will not put it out yet because we think that the programming is too sloppy. We will put it out in the next generation, and that's one of the first things we are going to do now. Sorry.
Any other questions? Is this so? Basically, you are interacting directly with the individual registrants.
Yes, we are.
So this is basically a solution for the registrar.
It is, but
part of your combined function.
Yeah, but we put both the registrant and the registrar is in the same position.
I know.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, if somebody was the one thing that was a bit difficult for us, there were two things in the beginning for us about Fred. First, I couldn't get it to install.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was a few years ago when we were running an Ubuntu version that was, I think, higher than the version it was running to.
Mm-hmm.
And even a full day with Jaromir, the programmer in Prague, didn't help much. But the drinks were nice in the evenings. In the end, what I always felt that Fred was missing was a package for the registrar. So that the registrar can use this and he can to do these things and interface with his own processes. How do you guys in Estonia do that? Are you also your own registrar or do you have a registrar registry model?
We have a pure registrar model, and we have 41 registrars, including 9 which are international companies and ICANN accredited registrar. So we use the thread in registrar relationship in very universal way.
And the local registrars, how do they, did they write their own things?
Yes, basically there are two ways. One is to use this EPP client, which is provided by Fred, and as this buy-in fee or this fee to sign a contract with us is relatively low. We have also registrars who offer this as a side service and not a business by itself. And they use this EPP client. But also, of course, the bigger registrars, they have written their own EPP client, and so of course these registrations are done fully in automatic way, and also concerning this this question which raised before about the data, getting out the data from the bank, this is also automated, yes.
The reason why I'm asking is I'm into development, so emerging registrars.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, Faroe is a small place, there will not be many emerging registrars in Faroe, but if somebody wants to start doing .shop and want to register in .shop, if .shop were using Fred, I'm looking at it from that perspective. But the command line client, is that what you refer to?
Yes, I meant that command line client, yes.
All right. Any other questions there? Here you go.
I
Identify yourself, please, for the participants.
Ambrose is my name. I'm from Uganda. I work for the government. I'm interested in knowing if you have any legislation, because I'm seeing some restrictions that you cannot register some city names or...
Please speak louder. I can't hear.
Okay. I can't even stand up. I'm interested in knowing if you have any local legislation, because I'm seeing some issues there, like not allowing some names to be registered, then the displaying of applications for some time for comments. So do you have any local law or legislation that governs your operations? Thank you.
No, we don't. We have all the regulation is done by the FO Council, so it's no national law. We are not under any national law at all.
So they make it up as they go along?
Yes.
That's good. And it seems to work.
Hi, yes. My name is Okwe Otuso from .ng Nigeria. I saw on your website that you have a couple of names that are protection list. So my question is, what criteria do you use to determine what domains you put under protection?
It is the FO Council and the regulation we have made allow us to protect names of public interest. For instance, as mentioned there, island names and city names and so on, names of public interest, and also names of interest of .fo, I mean nic.fo, of course, and also fo.fo and names.fo and so on. You know, all these names that would obscure .fo, we also protect.
I think the important point here is not so much what names are in there or you decide what names to, but to have a predictable process so that you have, that people know names that do like this. In Namibia, we don't allow somebody to register a name insulting our president or our founding father, as we call it, previous president. We don't do that, so the names are in there. Yeah. You can try similar things, basic things. The point is that this is well documented and discovered. You can put whatever you want, and as long as people know, this is the things we don't allow. Yeah, then the details are not really important. There was a question here, and then Marek again.
Thank you. My name is Karim from Comoros Islands. I saw in your website your language uses a lot of special characters. So a natural question is, do you plan to add the IDN option to allow user to be easy in the language? Thank you.
We have not implemented IDN yet, but we are thinking of it, but also there we are not unanimous. So we are working on it.
Yeah, but that's a political operational question. Technically, FRED was written in the Czech Republic. They have got diacriticals in that language. So unless you can turn around, the guys are sitting right behind you, and they will contradict me. But I think it supports IDN out of the box. Almost, yeah. But that's the guy you want to talk to. Yeah, he will tell you. Okay. If there's no more questions, I will give the floor for a word to our sponsor for the lunch.
Sorry, I had two questions indeed.
You were there, so I
forgot. First is the easy one, and as it's my particular interest, because in Estonia we have a multi-stakeholder policy development process. And the question which always arises which constantly is discussed is a domain name price. And you have also a relatively high price, as we, our price is 17 euros, but how you explain it or argue it to your community to have such a relatively high domain name price? That's the first question.
Yeah, the price, we put the price at that level because we would stop domainers. Because in our view, domainers, the only thing they do is hiring the price for the end user. Nothing more and nothing less.
Thank you. And the other question, I try to be brief and don't hold the lunch, but the other question is regarding geographical location of your country, as your country is very remote from the rest of the world, and you are, I think, very much dependent on these sea cable, undersea internet cables and data cables, and of course they are not very reliable. Usually, accidents could happen with them. But how do you solve this threat or this? This is indeed, I think, a cybersecurity threat also towards government. And how do you solve this? Do you have some kind of replica in on mainland Europe or these kind of solutions developed? Thank you.
Thank you for the question. Yes, as you point out, we are very dependent of the sea cables we have, but we also do have a satellite connection, but of course it's much slower and much expensiver. But we have redundancy both down to Europe and up to Iceland. So yet we have not had any problems with it. But of course it can arise, but it is out of .fo's jurisdiction. It is the telecommunication companies in the Faroe Islands that own those cables and run them, you know. Thank you.
Thank you.
Backup. We run Kokka, we run it on PostgreSQL, like all of this. We run an hourly backup. We escrow it every 6 hours into a foreign country with a safe jurisdiction. That's not a big deal. Find yourself a country that has a good jurisdiction, that has got capable and fast web hosters, and just dump it every 6 hours over there. Do an hourly or quarter. Some people, how many? 60,000 names? How many? 2,000, 3,000?
3,109.
Okay, we have got 2,445. This is a small amount of data. The audit is the biggest stuff. We back up Postgres every hour, and we escrow it every 6 hours over to our host site for a small place. The DNS is totally separate. The DNS is anycasted galore. If something goes wrong, it won't happen. It's just that you don't lose the data to reconstruct everything if you have a catastrophic failure. That's a simple thing to do. That's not really a big deal.
The question why I asked it, it's connected with the events in 2007 when the cyber attacks were, and then these international connections were closed down, and there it's basically there are two internets, one is domestic and one is international, and our companies and also government wants to have their sites and this name solution working both in domestically and internationally, and also they want to make changes to the zone file. So these are my biggest concerns when talking about this domain name registry located on a territory which is remote and very much dependent on quite unreliable connections.
No, the registry is located in where the people are. It serves the local community. Okay, the people, it serves the local and internet and international internet community, but the local internet community is on the islands. The
you must separate the DNS name server solution from making changes to zone file. Changes to, there is no such thing as doing a database orientated emergency change to a zone file that can you that you cannot do over some other means of communication if you have the primary at some location. For example, we use ISC. If it's really a big drama, we can call them up or send them a fax or do some other means, radio, whatever it takes, communication, to actually tell them do this and this. But even in Estonia, I don't think there were many instances where emergency changes to that clients needed to make emergency changes to their domain names in a DNS.
Yeah, this was basically a theoretical scenario, and of course it's quite done in this theoretical scenario in quite an emergency situation. Of course, this probability it could happen is very low, and I don't want to hold on the lunch anymore with this question.
Yeah, we must. I'm trying to stall a little bit because we must first figure out where it is. Okay, no, but so I can stop stalling because we found out. Okay, then I can deliver the word from the sponsor.
Thank you. This will be very quick because I know you're hungry. My name is Nigel Roberts. I'm the CCTLD manager for Guernsey and Jersey.gg and JE. For some historical reasons, I'm also a director of moribund organization called CCTLD Services. We used to organize CCTLD meetings just before the formation of the CCNSO. My co-directors are Willie Black, who used to be the representative for Nominet.uk, and Elizabeth Porterneuve, who was .fr. We've got some money left. Enjoy your lunch.
And I must make one small correction. It's not a brown bag, it's a white box.